Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to another Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, of course, Chris Martinson. And today, I am really pleased to have Bill Fleckenstein back on as our guest. Bill is the president of Fleckenstein Capital, a money management firm based in Seattle. He writes a daily market wrap column for his subscription-based website, FleckensteinCapital.com, as well as the popular column, Contrarian Chronicles, for MSN Money. Now, when I last interviewed Bill back in early 2011, we were both concerned by the interventionist actions the Fed had taken in response to the 2008 crisis. Boy, if we were concerned then, our hair should be on fire right about now, because since then, we've had the announcements of QE3 and 4, we had Operation Twist, and we've got what's going on in Japan. So listen, we've had a lot of volatility in the precious metals markets, and all of this increasingly looks like there are big players definitely working their way through the markets, and I'm really excited to get Bill's views on this. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris.
So let's begin with gold and what happened on Friday, and then maybe move to Monday. So on Friday, I noted that, as everybody did, there was this huge, gigantic volume, a lot of downside pressure in the gold markets, and the open interest on those contracts really spiked. What do you take from that?
Well, you know, I think there's a handful of comments that one could make. First of all, we have to remember that gold and silver, while being stores of value, they're also commodities. And the commodities futures markets allow for a whole lot of game playing and what might be construed as manipulation, where guys try to push each other, or try to push the market around, right? It's still kind of the wild, wild west. So it is a market where you can see, you know, wild price swings a lot. Now, the prices can go to the quote-unquote the wrong place and only stay there for a while because, you know, eventually what goes on in the physical market will change things around. Obviously, the mammoth size of the sell-off on the mammoth volume and the proximity to Goldman Sachs' let's get short gold part, you know, has to raise an eyebrow amongst any sane person, I think. You know, it's unusual for Goldman Sachs to say let's short anything. The report that they had was certainly flawed, but nonetheless, the tactic worked. And whether one believes that the market was vulnerable to the downside because of the prior decline that we've experienced in the last year and a half, or whether one believes that the idea was to quote-unquote break the market, the fact of the matter is a gargantuan amount of contracts were sold and prices cascaded. The question is now what happens next? I suspect that because of this onslaught of selling, I think the gold market has now finally made a low. That the gold market has been declining since September of 2011, and so basically the gold market has been in a bear market, if you will, for a year and a half. I think this is the end of that leg, and the next leg up will be the fact that people will recognize that the policies that these central bankers have pursued have had consequences. You know, basically gold peaked when Bernanke didn't start QE2 on time. Since then, he's done QE2, QE3, QE4. The Japanese have gotten involved. Swiss National Bank is going crazy. So you've never had an environment that demands more that people own gold than what we have now. And as that has occurred, the gold market declined. I mean, markets that go down on good news like that, those are bear markets. Well, I didn't see it coming. I didn't understand it. But, you know, here we are. I think prospectively now the market's going to rally because people, the consequences of all the central bank actions, besides just raising stock prices, are going to be felt. And I think that will lead to higher prices, and all the vociferous bears will be forced to stop yapping about it. So anyway, that was a long answer to a short question.
I love the answer. Before we move on to some of the more fundamental reasons why gold makes sense here, I want to backtrack to this idea that there's a disconnect now, I think, between the papers market. And I agree with your assessment. There are very big players that are very deep-pocketed. We saw in the lead up to that historic plunge on Friday, the large specs had one of the largest open short positions on record. I mean, you have to go back, I think, to 2008. So these are the big boys, right? And girls, they've got the giant hedge funds. They've got a lot of capital. And so They were very short. And, of course, these are the ones who would have made out like bandits in this whole thing because, you know, this was a basic wealth transfer from a lot of people who were long to people who happened to have been short. The shorts won. And as they play that whole battle out, one of the things you would have expected, given what I saw in the newspaper, what with Paul Krugman's comments and sort of this gleeful noting that gold bugs had been smashed, you would think, well, that should be a pretty dispiriting moment. And lo and behold, as I gather information from around the U.S. and Japan and China, Australia, the whole world basically went on a gold buying spree, at least at the retail level. So it looks like there's a disconnect between what happened in the paper markets and how people responded to it. I mean, are you seeing the same thing or is something shifted in the market?
Here's the thing. People need to understand the following. The physical market in the end is the real market, and that's going to dictate the long-term price because that's going to dictate the demand side of the supply and demand equation. However, in the short run, the paper market is so much bigger that, you know, there's no amount of physical buying probably. I mean, I would hate to have to think about what would happen in the world to have enough physical buying push the market up as much as it went down on Friday and Monday.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the paper market, i.e. the futures market, there's almost an infinite amount of supply or theoretically demand that can be created. So the tail wags the dog. The derivatives market in the gold complex and in almost all commodities, maybe not oil, I don't know that much about oil, but certainly in the precious metals, the tail wags the dog in the short run. So what happened is the paper market got bombed and set off all kinds of panic, and there was selling in, you know, the ETFs and things like that. But in the physical market, what happened was lower prices created buyers and not sellers. And so there were all kinds of stories of physical buyers inhaling metal. And I think that's why this is going to turn out to be the low, because they've gotten it to a price where demand is coming out of the woodwork. I'm sure central banks in Asia are buying metal. And over time, the physical demand will push the prices higher. Now, at some point, guys that are short are going to have to cover. We don't know how much they covered on this break or how much they pressed. We don't know. We'll see this commitment to traders report on Friday night, but that will only be through Tuesday, although that will be an interesting snapshot, certainly given what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the short interest is probably bigger than people think, because I think that it's not just what you see in the futures market. There probably was some short selling of GLD as well, because the single most popular thing to hate in the whole world, if you're a stock bull or what I call the Goldilocks crowd that never seems to see any problems coming, the single thing you want to hate most is gold. So I think it doesn't take much when the market action, the price action of gold is weak, to get a lot of people to jump on the bandwagon. So, you know, all these people got short are liable to find out that while they had some fun for a little while, it didn't work out so well for them, they'll wind up losing money.
Well, let's talk about some of the more fundamental reasons. I note that the all-in average cost of production for gold is a little over $1,100 per ounce across the world, and that means that that's average. So some do better than that. Of course, some do worse. So we're probably already at the break point for a number of producers that are out there. So we've got that fundamental reason. You mentioned, you know, what we saw with Japan doubling its monetary base. We've got North Korea still doing some very crazy things over there. Europe, Cyprus, negative real interest rates. What's really, when you say fundamentally gold is a good buy from here, what's on your radar screen as being most important?
If you saw the stock bubble coming in the late 90s, why did you see that? Because you could see what the Fed was doing and the response that people were having and the misallocation of capital and all the problems that that was going to lead to. If you saw that coming, you couldn't buy stocks. Your only real choice was to do nothing or short stocks. Shorting stocks is tricky. Those were the responses. Fast forward to 2008, if you saw the even worse and more problematic real estate bubble again, you know, you could buy stocks or you could short them. You couldn't buy real estate. It was difficult to short real estate. What were the proper responses? Well, in the interim of those two, you also could have had the response to buy gold, because we knew what the central banks, the Fed's response was going to be. Now here we are today. If you understand the problems of the world, you've understood those problems, you can't buy stocks because they're only up because of money printing. You can't really short them because it's so hard to fight that money printing. The only thing you can do to protect yourself is to buy gold. But the little bits of misallocation of capital we saw in 99 and even in the 2007 and 8 at tail end of the housing bubble were nothing compared to what these central banks are doing now with their balance sheet. So a person that has no choice but to own some metals to protect themselves against what these lunatic central bankers have done. Now, the central bankers have gotten away with their policies to hear with little criticism because that's taken up stock prices and no one seems to mind, but it hasn't precipitated enough inflation for people to say, hey, wait a minute, you're killing us here. So I think the fundamental reasons to own precious metals is it's the only way to protect yourself against the debasement of the paper. We will hit a moment in time where there will be a rapid acceleration of the perception that people are being cheated via inflation by these money printing policies. Why Americans seem to think there's no inflation just because the CPI says so when their checkbooks every day ought to tell them there is, I cannot explain that. But there will be a change in psychology, and there will be a massive stampede into gold here and everywhere else around the world because it's the only way you can protect yourself against these policies. You can express a negative view by being short stocks or bonds, but that may or may not work because they're buying so much paper.
I completely agree that one of the, you know, this brings to mind Keynes' famous quote that not one man in a million can diagnose. Inflation is how it's commonly put, but actually what he was referring to there was the mechanism by which this inflation happens. And so can you think of a single period in time where money printing, which is essentially creating purchasing power out of thin air, and transferring that purchasing power typically, I guess, now to governments because that's government deficit spending is I think, the largest beneficiary, largest single beneficiary of that increased out-of-thin-air purchasing power. But if you study this even just for a half an hour, you'll find out that that purchasing power that was created out of thin air had to have been transferred from somewhere else. So this is really one of the largest wealth transfers in all of history, at least by the trillions and trillions printed. And so what you're saying is that eventually people, their wealth is being transferred out. All they have to do is look at their checkbook to understand that wealth is being transferred away from them. That's what inflation really is. It's a tax. And that it's being transferred to somewhere else. And that sooner or later, that dynamic feeds on itself. And people just, well, you said stampede into gold, but maybe they stampede away from dollars or whatever their currency is. Is there any period in history where this has not been true, where this wealth transfer process has been kicked off and somehow we got it back under control without some unpleasant moments, at least speaking currency-wise?
Well, the world has never existed like it does today, the financial world, where the BOJ and the Fed are printing, you know, the enormous amounts of money that they are, and so is the Swiss National Bank. And then let's not forget, there are dollar pegs all over the planet, right? Whether it's in Asia or South America. So there are lots of places where they're also stimulating and printing money, you know. So we've never been here before. There's no chance they're going to get the genie back in the bottle. You know, I just don't know whether we have a train wreck in the bond market first or gold goes into orbit first. It's hard to play step forward on this. But what we do know is that we've never seen this before. The guaranteed to shred purchasing value of currencies over time and what exactly it takes to change psychology, I can't predict. We'll just have to see what it is.
Well, let's talk about that bond market for a minute, because this is another asset class firmly on my radar screen. It really popped into high relief. Read that junk bonds had hit an all-time record low in yield or high in price, and that really caught me eye because it speaking of psychology, talk about not learning your lessons. Since when junk bonds at 5.6%? Are you crazy? So your thoughts on the bond market? I would love to hear those. I know we've got PIMCO's Bill Gross saying that eventually they'll be burned to a crisp, but everybody's still dancing as long as the music's playing, and nobody seems willing to really articulate what that risk is. But what do you see in the bond market in terms of risk structure?
Well, I mean, I see the same thing any sane person sees. The bond market is an accident waiting to happen. There is the only thing you know about the bond market is eventually they're going to give you your principal back. What it will actually purchase versus what it purchases today, we can't say. So the bond market is just a vehicle by which you can get your money back over time at some debased amount, and in the interim they'll pay you next to nothing that's not even equal to the inflation rate. Well, when that changes, I can't say. I mean, you know, if the world worried about inflation, which it ought to because of what's going on, I think the bond markets would start to crack up. People would start to demand more in terms of yield. They would slowly be starting to take the printing press away from the central bankers, which is what needs to happen in the long run. But until inflation psychology changes, I don't know what's going to cause the bond market to be derailed, given how much is being purchased by the Fed and the financial system on the back of the Fed and guys playing the carry trade. I mean, when the bond market finally does crack, it is going to be one epic nightmare that's going to make 2008 seem like 2009 seem like a picnic. It'll be a different kind of a crisis, but it will be an enormous crisis. These people that are bullish about stocks and bonds and the bond market, they don't understand anything.
Well, I guess they understand the central bank put, and they're counting on more money printing creating more of the same. You would be saying that nothing can like this can continue forever because it just doesn't make sense.
But that's not an investable thought either. Saying it can't go on forever doesn't mean that, you know, you can't short stocks or bonds in the back of it. Now, maybe you can short stocks now because they're about to crack. I don't know. You can't really short the bond market yet. But you ought to be able to buy gold. These policies will continue until the bond market croaks. In the interim, you ought to be able to make money in gold. Now, you know, the gold market's been under pressure now for, like I say, 18 months. And we had a huge break off the top in September of 2011 when Bernanke didn't do QE2 when they thought he would.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've just had an immense crack after having had, for a year and a half, central banks go hog wild. I cannot believe that there's not going to be an enormous rally prospectively in the gold market once it stabilizes and starts grind higher. It's going to go one hell of a lot higher, I think.
I would agree. And, you know, one of the comments that I've been reading a lot lately, whether it's been printed by somebody writing the article or in the comments section below some of these articles, which drives me a little nuts, is saying, oh, look, the gold bubble burst. And I can still go to parties and talk to 100 people and find maybe one.
Did any of those people say that said, oh, the gold bubble burst? Did they also talk about the apple bubble that burst?
No, that never comes up in polite conversation.
I wrote a column about this time last year about the potential top in Apple shares, right?
Yep.
And, you know, the Apple bubble burst, and nobody says anything. Now, it wasn't really a bubble. It was just an insane price move. But all the people that think gold is a bubble, almost to a man, they're the same people that didn't see the equity bubble or the real estate bubble. There were no bubbles that hit them in the face. They lived through two. But now they're sure gold's a bubble. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's just all you have to do, all an objective person has to do, is consider the source. Does the guy who says, I have to buy gold because of these policies the central bank's pursuing, does that man or woman have a good track record in having understood the economy the last decade or so? Or if they say sell it, does that person have a good understanding? Or more likely, the people that are saying sell it are the same idiots who didn't see anything coming, and the person who says buy it are most of the thoughtful types who did. That doesn't mean somebody who says buy gold is going to be right today, tomorrow, the next day. It means they understand what is happening in the big sweeps of time, and they're going to be right over time at an important inflection point. People laughed at me during the equity bubble and the real estate bubble when I was trying to point it out. But guess what? That was the correct analysis. And anybody who laughed about that got hurt badly. And the people that want to laugh at the gold bulls are going to get hurt just as badly.
Well, let's talk about what the inflection point might be. You mentioned it, you know, who knows when the psychology will break. But just to give a quick anecdote around this, looking at Spain, in the past 8 months, Spain's borrowing costs have been more or less steadily falling, some sawtooth pattern in that, but it went from a high to a low. Over the past 8 months, and Spain has done nothing but deteriorate from a macro perspective in any statistics I can find, whether it be bank, bad loan reserves that they have to book for bad loans, or the rates of failure, or what's happening in the real estate market, or the deficit spending of the government compared to GDP because GDP is falling, or its unemployment. It's just it looks like a complete train wreck to me, and yet borrowing costs have fallen because and only because the central bank over there, the ECB, is enabling and encouraging the purchase of sovereign bonds by all sorts of parties. So how long can that really continue before, I mean, I know that's unknowable, but in your mind, what might cause it to crack, and what will you be looking for to know that those cracks have started?
There are so many places catalysts could come from. It could be Italy, it could be France. Hell, it could even be something going wrong in Germany, or Spain, or Portugal, or Japan. One of the reasons why I believe the sovereign debt markets have done better in Europe, in addition to Draghi's promise of OMTs, which he hasn't had to use, is because the world's biggest yield pigs, the Japanese, have been turned loose. They all know their currency is going to be debased, and the BOJ is going to buy bonds coming. And so I'm sure the Japanese are buying all kinds of this high-yielding crap in Europe because they're going to make money on the currency, and they're going to make money on the yield, and they don't even worry about risk. So, I mean, it's not possible to know where the problem's going to be. It could be a failed bond auction in Great Britain. I mean, who knows which is going to be the canary in the coal mine. There's bad policies being pursued on a gargantuan scale everywhere, and I don't know what will be the catalyst. We just have to be alert that these policies are insane, they're going to lead to trouble, and decide when it's going to matter. I didn't know what was going to end the housing bubble. It turns out the first sign of the end was when the subprime lenders started experiencing first payment default. That was March of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the stock market rallied into August. The subprime companies were getting destroyed. They said it's just subprime. They didn't even understand that all day was the same thing. None of those, and the whole food chain, even Bernanke didn't understand. But that was the tip-off. That was the first catalyst. I don't know what it will be in this go-round. You just have to be alert and try to understand, okay, that's it. And if you understand the mosaic, you say, well, okay, that means this ought to happen next. And when that starts to happen next, then you can start to draw a bead on the fact that the thing's unwinding. But I can't possibly predict. No one can. And I don't know when. We just have to be alert to clues. You have to understand what's happening to know what clues to look for and what one thing here means over there. If you were a dope, didn't understand the housing bubble, then when the first payment defaults happen, you just said, gee, that's kind of odd. What does that mean?
Yeah. So turning to the equity markets quickly, you know, I've gotten into a number of debates. One of them with Morgan over at Motley Fool. He thinks that putting money into the stock market makes a lot of sense. And I just noted some simple, what I thought fairly fundamental things, such as with corporate profits now at 11% of GDP, it's way, way above the long-term average. And of course, you know, you can't really just mathematically have corporate profits that are running hotter than your nominal GDP growth for very long. The only way you can do that is because the profits, the surplus in corporations means there's a deficit somewhere else. Well, that's our government, that's our savings rate, among other things. What is, I'm sure you're going to have a great answer for this, but what happens when people are looking at 11% of GDP corporate profits and then extrapolating those into the future? How is it that, here's what I'm flabbergasted about. Didn't we just have 2008? Didn't we already have 2000? How is it that we are back in this moment where what seems to me to be a completely, obviously unsustainable position is being not only defended, but marketed really aggressively and people are buying it? I'm not even sure what the question is. I mean, as a contrarian, are you just shaking your head or is there some way that you can understand these people?
It is staggering that as you mentioned, people seem to have learned so little after going through 2008. And the prior equity bubble. But, you know, the TV is full of people who cheerlead and don't seem to understand what has transpired. I can't say exactly why that continues to be the case, but it does. The stock market has been buoyed because of all the money printing that is going on, and so the fundamentals don't necessarily make any sense, but they don't really have to make any sense when they're printing money like this. So you can't really fight it. All you can know is that it's a misallocation of capital. People will get hurt. But that doesn't mean it can't go up.
All right. Well, speaking about how things go up, the final question here is around the impact of high-frequency trading robots. I see their fingerprints all over the markets constantly now. And I saw them in the gold market on Sunday night where, you know, normal size lots would be going through it at, you know, when humans are pressing them in, I don't know, five contracts, 10 contracts. And then all of a sudden in a single I'm watching ticks here, so this might be 8 seconds long. I'll watch 12,000 contracts go through, blast through a bid structure, and just
you can't make sense of any of this stuff. These computers, they have all kinds of crazy strategies, and it just means that on any given moment in time, almost anything can trade anywhere, and someday the computers will blow themselves up, but I don't know when, and it creates for all kinds of crazy price movements and insanity.
Well, I want to talk about
there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, what's the risk there? I view these HFT robots
as... the risk is a flash crash. We can have a flash crash anytime.
So it's a fragile market structure. It could just...
Yeah, of course. You got computers making decisions. I mean, it's only computers would do the crazy things that have happened. So we could have long few things happen. We could have a crash. For all we know, some computers have some big hand in the gold break. I don't know. It just means that you have to be more careful because the prices are fragile.
So outside of gold, do you have any other investment areas, sectors, ideas that you think make sense in this particular environment?
Not really. I think that's the sane way to protect oneself against these irresponsible and financially destabilizing policies the central bankers should all follow.
So it's time to take some chips off the table, go get a drink, and wait and see how the rest of the hands get played out. But history...
Yeah, if someone has big exposure to the stock market and has done well, they need to ask themselves, do I feel lucky today? Because, you're going to have to be lucky from here. People are going to lose lots of money, but I wouldn't advocate trying to be short to either. The reason I closed my short fund in 2009 was because I knew these guys would pursue these crazy policies and make it very difficult to make money on the short side.
Absolutely, indeed. Well, I have not been short the market since December of 2009. It took me a little while to figure out that I was fighting the wrong battle on that one. And I've actually been dead flat the market the entire rest of the time. So I've just been sitting back watching. And I'm a little surprised it's taken this long for things to play out, because what we've just been talking about seems so completely obvious to me. How this is going to turn out?
Look how obvious the housing bubble was, and people sucked into that, and went on forever. This you have to know a little bit more about finance, about central bank actions and monetization of debt and all that. So look how long that lasted.
That's true. This is a slightly more subtle conversation, but really, it seems completely obvious once you just spend an hour on it.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you about that.
So that's the mystery to me, is why, when your entire future is hanging on the balance, why people don't take the hour to figure out what's going on here. But this is, if I could summarize, this only can end in tears. We don't know when, and it's going to be precipitated by something. Bubbles always find a pin. We can't predict where that pin's going to be. Japan, some random comment a German finance minister makes, maybe it's Portugal's bank, who knows. In the meantime, we just watch, maybe shaking our heads a little bit, and sit back and protect ourselves as best we can, gold being one of the best ways. Is that about it?
Yep, that's a pretty good summation.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it, and I hope we can do this again, hopefully after something interesting has happened in the markets, where we can see some sanity and maybe some fundamentals and common sense return.
All righty, that's a deal.
All right.
Talk to you then.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.